Joy is the topic for April. And I find it to be a rather challenging topic to dive into right now. It's challenging to dive into joy when all of these things are happening in the world. And I'm not feeling a lot of it. I'm noticing that my spirit seems oriented a little more towards cynicism and frustration lately. And that's why I think Annette's story, The Sparrow and the Star, spoke to me. The first time I read it, when I got to the part where the star invited Sparrow to become one of them, I actually whispered out loud, "Oh no." It felt so sad to me. I could only see the end of the sparrow, not the light of the star. I could only feel the sacrifice of becoming hope for someone else, not the joy of fulfilling a lifelong and a heart's calling. All I could think was, that poor little thing just went through all of that searching and questioning just to lose itself. But of course, just like anything else in life, what we see, what we hear, what we perceive, how we interpret, it says way more about us than it does about whatever it is that we're seeing and hearing and perceiving and interpreting. That was the simplest and most profound clue I've had lately, that I've been a little hopeless myself. So I read the story again, and this time when I got to the end, I let myself imagine this little sparrow with its courage and tenacity, its love for the light, flying through this difficult journey, getting nowhere, until ultimately she flies as high as she possibly can, so she can talk to and see the stars themselves. And there she is, and she is not disappointed. Not disappointed at all. She knew all along, and she trusted, that the stars must be something special, doing something special, that their glimmer and gleams, their shine, must mean something, and she was right. And I let myself feel the joy of finding exactly what we're looking for. And the very poignant and sometimes surprising feeling of being welcomed into a place of one's deepest admiration or desire. Not just, oh, beautiful stars, but you are one of us and you are welcome here. To find that you really do belong exactly where you wanted to be, how often does that happen? What a joy that is. You are not outside of that which you long for, but are instead integral to it, a part of it. That kind of joy is about the joy that comes from transformation. And as I was reminded yesterday by Stanley Witkin in our UU and U class, transformation is not a passive thing. It requires action of some sort. It asks something of us. The joy that comes from becoming what you're meant to be, or learning something that you were meant to learn, or changing in some way that opens your heart to something that it wasn't open to before, that kind of transformational joy requires a lot of misery along the way, a lot of hard work. It doesn't just spontaneously happen in the quiet of a meadow looking at a bird. Although honestly, Mary Oliver would tell us that can be transformative too, and of course it is. But the joy in Annette's story and the joy that J. Drew Landrum writes of in his Justice poem that Ivy read the excerpt from, that joy, the transformation born there, comes from a commitment and a willingness to face life exactly as it is, and to know yourself and to love yourself, to believe in something bigger that you can't really see, but you choose it anyway. You choose joy anyway. You choose hope anyway. You become hope. You become joy, even when the heartbreak is constant and deep. The kind of joy that comes from a willingness to stay in the conversation of life, to not back out of it, and trust with each disappointment, setback, or struggle, there is a promise within it, a promise of change, a promise of becoming something different, that each disappointment, setback, or struggle cannot steal that which was not given. like joy, like grace, like love. They simply are. It's just that sometimes we have to do some work to feel it. Stanley also reminded us yesterday in class that you can't transform into something new without being willing to let go of something old. You have to make space for change to happen. And that's why there's a sadness in the story and in the poem. And when we're on our own journeys of learning and discovery, we have to ask ourselves, what idea, belief, learning, fear am I being asked to let go of in order to become more whole, more of who I'm meant to be? There's actually a story in our UU history that I stumbled upon when I was researching materials for our UU and U class. I'd never heard it before. It's probably a little bit of an urban myth, but even myths are born in some kind of truth, I think. It's a good example of what we're talking about here today. It was written up by a UU Faith Formation minister, Jessica York. I've adapted it for brevity's sake. It's important to remember that, as I've said to you many times, Unitarian Universalism is a living faith. We believe that people should be free to believe whatever they must believe, the truth of their experiences, instead of professing belief in what they're told to believe. That doesn't mean you can believe anything you want, but we'll talk about that another time. This is what it means to say that we're a creedless religion. We do not have a creed or a doctrine per se. But a living faith means any one of us can change at any moment when we experience a deeper truth that contradicts our previous beliefs. But in order to change, we have to be open. We have to be open to new thoughts, new ideas, and new experiences. We have to have ears open to hear. There's that old saying that we have two ears and one mouth because we're supposed to listen twice as much as we talk. Comes from that. Sometimes we listen with our ears. But when you're part of a sacred, beloved community, you listen not only with your ears, but also with your heart. And this is where amazing change can really happen. So, this story takes place before the merger of Unitarianism and Universalism. So, in 1948, they were still separate denominations. Most congregations, including Unitarian and Universalist congregations, houses of worship in the United States, were segregated by skin color still. Some were segregated by law, others by custom, or simply by a lack of actively trying to welcome and include all people. So this story takes place at the First Unitarian Society of Chicago, and this was one of those congregations who had written into their bylaws that African Americans were not welcome to join their church. Now, somewhere along the line, folks started to recognize that if they really wanted to live their values and principles, they needed to take action against racism. So the then minister, the Reverend Leslie Pennington, was ready for this day, and he spoke with the board president, who happened to be James Luther Adams, who's a very famous Unitarian theologian and social ethicist. And so they brought to the congregation this need to desegregate. They saw this as the way that they were meant to put their love into action. But in 1948, which really was not all that long ago, and if you think about it, even now, anything having to do with skin color and racism is controversial. So some people of that church, even those who supported African Americans in demanding their civil liberties, fought very hard for the separate but equal policy. So when the congregation's board considered the desegregation proposal, most of them supported it, but there was a few loud and very strong objections. One board member said, "Your new program is making desegregation into a creed. You're asking everyone in our church to say they believe desegregating or inviting or even recruiting people of color to attend church here is a good way to tackle racism. What if some members don't believe this?" How do you even begin to address that? But they continued to talk. Respectful debate ensued. They kept going. It seemed along the way that maybe they were so busy trying to be heard that they forgot to listen, so they kept on talking. And just like in the story I told you a couple weeks ago from General Assembly, this meeting went on and on and on until the late wee hours of the morning, and this is after a long and lengthy process with the congregation. Everyone was exhausted and frustrated, and finally, James Luther Adams remembered that we should be listening more than we're talking. And so he looked at the person, the man who had voiced the strongest objection in the beginning of the process, and he said this question, he asked this question, "What do you say is the purpose of this church?" And everyone got very quiet. Everyone wanted to hear the answer to that question. And the board member took a long time answering it and finally looked at James Luther Adams and said, "Okay, Jim, the purpose of this church is to get a hold of people like me and change them." And the First Unitarian Society of Chicago was successfully desegregated. Now, what I want to say in closing here is that actually, I don't believe that we can change people, at least not without their consent and full participation. What I hear in that board member's answer is that the purpose of this church is to respect each other wherever we are, but to create the conditions in which transformation can occur. Through listening, through loving, through tenacious hope and abiding trust that the process matters, that no one is outside the circle of love, that change is possible, and that the best kind of joy is found in the midst of letting go of what once was, so you move toward what can be. May it be so in our lives and always. Amen, and blessed be.